You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I speak to Viv Govender from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg, David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in the same city. And David, I'll start with you because I read a LinkedIn article from you just a few hours ago, actually, and it was all to do with the American stock market versus other stock markets in terms of market capitalization. And I thought, there's David being US-centric again. But not at all. You make some very, very good points. But I would like to say big is not always best. Or rather, the best thing is, the bigger they are, the harder they fall.
The more money they make.
Yeah, very good.
What I'm trying to illustrate is just the size of these businesses. We mentioned it a week or two ago when the results came out, you know, when I was just overwhelmed by the actual amounts of money, the absolute amount of money that these companies generate. And this is just an extension of it. You know, I was just extending, listen, this is how big the U.S. is. Yeah, you know, there are a lot of people in the stock markets and everybody's got their own opinion. And a lot of people like to play at the bottom end of the market in small caps and they can trade to their delight and make money. It doesn't mean you're not going to make money. I think what I'm trying to illustrate is just how powerful economically the U.S. is and how much more powerful they're getting through the size of these businesses. And you know, it's quite remarkable that the U.S. market is I'm just giving this for you know, for Viv's sake, that the U.S. market is something like $73 trillion. I mean, that's an enormous amount of money. And if you look at the other markets, like the Chinese market is $16 trillion. Sorry, did I say 73 trillion? Yeah.
Yes.
So the Chinese market is $16 trillion. Europe is a lot less. I'm just going to look it up, the number now. I've forgotten where Europe is, but it's Europe is, hold on here, 14 trillion. So you've got China, sorry, 17 trillion, 14 trillion, you know, together. And Switzerland, 2.4, UK, 3. Put those markets together, you don't come close to the US. And if we take the top five stocks, Nvidia, Apple, Alphabet, Microsoft, Amazon, collectively around about 20 trillion, which is bigger than the Chinese market and certainly a lot bigger than Europe. So this is the size of those businesses that we're talking about. And I'm just illustrating how much they generate and how important they are in the global context. And they're not slowing down. They just continue to drive forward. And they've got the kind of money that can invest in where things are going. You know, I didn't even mention Tesla, but I mean, that's the point that I'm trying to make. Everybody gets very upset with the US. Yeah.
No, they don't get upset with it. They're just probably jealous of it. Viv, at what point do the companies become too big and then they start influencing political thought and political direction and the sort of thing we're seeing at the moment? I'm not talking about ballrooms being built because that's a lot of nonsense. But at some stage, someone will sit down with the US president or the governor of California and say, listen, my company produces more than your GDP in terms of revenue every single year. Viv, in the future, might that happen?
What do you mean in the future? Still isn't United, my friend. There's actually a U.S. court case that came out that basically said that, like, you know, corporate speech is like is part of free speech. There's a huge kind of shift in the U.S. You know, system in terms of just the amount of money being spent on some of these things. I mean, you have governor races in the U.S. where they spend more money than you would have in any, like, you know, political race in Europe. You know, we're talking about, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, sorry, in some cases. Mayorships, I mean, you know, in like New York City or Los Angeles, you're talking the kind of money you'd normally spend on a presidential, you know, race happening there. And let alone the billions, literally billions that are spent on a U.S. presidential race. What occurs in this scenario is that you get so much money being spent here that the only way you can compete is to have the money. And therefore, you become indebted to the people that give you the money. And so this has already occurred in the U.S., and I think that there was a study done a few years ago. I can't recall who did it, but it said that the relationship between what the electorate wants and what the politicians actually do is not that strong. The relationship between what I think the top percent of contributors want and what the politicians do is, you know, almost one to one. And that is the way the world works, quite frankly. It's already there. But the one thing I have to say in terms of the US is that it's such a massive outlier in terms of how big its capital markets are. So we talked about China, Europe, India. These are all places that have stock markets roughly equivalent to the size of their economy. You know, the US is like multiples the size of its economy. It's a very unusual stock market. And the number two thing is that the advantage of this is that it becomes the deepest capital pool. That means if you want to go and do something in the world and you really want to raise funds to do it, unfortunately, the US is the only way to go. You really can't raise the money you need to raise to do what, for instance, you want to spend the 100 billion that they, or 200 billion that these companies like Facebook and Amazon are spending in the US per company on AI. There's no way to raise that money in China except for the government. You just don't have the capital markets are deep enough. You just can't do that in Europe. You can't do that in India. And this is a huge advantage that the US has that, you know, kind of compounds as itself, like David says, that the further ahead you are, the further ahead you get. And that's kind of what's been happening in the US moment.
What about private credit? Because I asked somebody the question the other day, maybe it was David, actually, I don't know, but it was somebody, and I said, how do they raise between 700 billion and 1 trillion for CapEx for AI? These are the big tech stocks. Where does the money come from? They've got the money. Obviously, they've got a lot of money. They're generating cash. They're printing cash, but they have to raise some money somewhere else. And Viv is private. I'll stay with you, Viv. Is private credit a dangerous thing? Because there's been a lot of red flags been flying in the last few months about private credit.
They all study, but look, they aren't going to the bank and getting $700 billion loans. Let's be frank about that. Look, a lot of it has been like, you know, sovereign wealth funds that put the money in the U.S. A lot of international investors are pumping money into the U.S. And that's just because that's where the growth is, unfortunately, for the rest of the world. Europe is kind of, whatever reason, I know you're sitting in the Netherlands, we're the only company in Europe that basically seems to be involved in AI, the ASML. But the way Europe has gone over the last couple of decades is amazing in terms of just how much it's abdicated its role in the world. China, of course, you know, you say the wrong thing and suddenly you are Jack Ma and disappear for a few months and come back and become an English teacher or something. India is just not rich enough yet. Japan has its own massive things. The US is the only place in the world that you can really find this kind of huge amount of talent and huge amount of capital to invest in. And that's what's happening. And you know, at the moment, the AI spend, I know that I'm massive in AI. I mean, I was just looking at my portfolio. We did 20% the last month. You know, we haven't exactly been lagging, but we did 20% in the last month. And the reason for this is, quite frankly, just that the amount of money flowing into AI right now is insane. But the only place this could happen was the U.S. There's no other capital market in the world that could absorb this kind of investments.
Isn't that strange that you say all these things and you're extolling the virtues of the United States of America? And David as well, he's U.S.-centric when it comes to investing. But he doesn't like going to America because he's breathing the same air as Donald Trump. I know somebody who's an incredibly successful interior designer in New York, has had an apartment in Midtown, David, and you know how expensive Midtown apartments are. She's had it for 30 years. And it's now worth goodness knows how much. And I said, well, what are you going to do now? You're in your 60s. She said, I'm moving to Southwest London. I'm moving to Putney. I'm moving in with my sister because I don't want to be in America anymore. So it's almost like there's two Americas. I mean, three or four Americas, actually, David.
Yeah, that I can understand that. But how do you explain where it's going? I was listening to the Milken interviews on Bloomberg's at the Milken Institute. And I think one of my regrets is that I can't go to these seminars. You know, I don't know how much they cost in the other side of the world, and I'm not in that kind of mood. But when I listen to the interviews and I hear what is happening, where the world's going, and where America's going or where America's leading it, and going into space and I was listening to Kathy Wood talk about Elon Musk. I mean, it's quite phenomenal where this is going. And just to go back to what Viv says, there's only one place that can finance that. and that's the US. No one else is going to lay out that kind of risk capital to do these kind of projects. But when they get it right, of course, they're ahead of the market and everybody becomes a buyer, not a seller. You know, the rest of the world is buying from them, which allows the US to dictate terms of anything. So it's the Americans. I don't know whether it's you know, we British by background. I mean, even though we're South African and that we were brought up in the Westminster system of schooling and so on, of Parliament. And, you know, at the end of movies, we'd get up because and they play God Save the Queen at that stage. You know, that kind of.
Are you listening to this? Viv, are you listening to this?
You know, with yes. caps. You know, we had little school caps and short pants and played cricket and, you know, so on. But so, you know, that's how we brought up. And to an extent, the same kind of humor. We understand what irony is. America's a totally different culture. And it's not easy to get into it. But if you're an entrepreneur, if you've got that kind of spirit and you're and the Indians make it a lot, eh? I mean, there are a massive amount of highly educated Indians in America making it big. Wherever you look now, you'll see high-level people, you know, that have come from India. And I say it, India, because they had the kind of education system that the U.S. produced, I mean, that the U.K. produced, but they've got that kind of how do you explain it, Viv? You know, they're very, very ambitious and hardworking, and they can make it. They can tolerate that kind of culture, and they just go ahead. So I'm absolutely bummed out by how many successful Indian entrepreneurs and business people there are in US, because the system has allowed them to do what they can't do in India.
What about China? 6 days a week, and children on the Sunday on their day off are doing mathematical studying maths and doing maths exams online. Yeah. David, I mean, China and India are very similar when it comes to education. No. I think.
Oh, education, no. Yes, but the Indians play cricket, you know, I mean, or they were brought up British way, so they're love not going to go to China, you know, they're not.
I'm not talking about that, I'm just talking about two nations that are ahead of a place like Britain, which has an education system, which is quite frankly, it's probably Dickensian its nature. Have you been champing at the bit? I know you want to say something, because David kept on going on about the Indians doing well in America.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's a couple of things to mention here. Firstly, a stat will blow your mind. Elon Musk is worth roughly two times South Africa's GDP. Okay? Elon Musk alone is worth about $850 billion. South Africa's GDP is about $480 billion. So not quite, but roughly. It's significantly more than South Africa's GDP one man is worth. Now, Elon Musk was South African. He was born here, got the education here, and he went to the U.S. Why did he do so well in the U.S. versus South Africa? It's because of the system. That system makes it so much easier. Americans, I mean, they're perfectly nice people. I know plenty of Americans, and they're nice people. They're not special. They're not exceptional. They're not like, you don't speak to Americans and come away thinking, my God, these are the world's best, whatever. But what you do get is that a lot of people from around the world go to the U.S., and they do very well for themselves because the Americans literally have the world's best system. And the interesting thing, you talk about Indians and Chinese. Did you see Donald Trump's little tweet this week about immigrants and whatnot? And he had immigrants from North America making $500,000 contribution, immigrants from like, you know, Japan, $300,000 contribution, and, you know, and then from Somalia, -$1 million, and from like different, like, you know, countries, negative, negative, negative. So basically North America, Europe, and Japan, all positive, all the darker countries like, you know, South America, Africa, and so on, all negative. What's weird about that is he left out two countries. No countries left out? China and India. Why? Because the average Indian basically contributes like three times as much to America's taxes, like 1.6 million versus like the number you put as number one, the North Americans of like 500,000. And the average Chinese is about, I think, 800,000 or 900,000 as well. So significantly above that. And the reason being is that a couple of things. Firstly, when you take the best off to effectively 40% of the world, they're going to be pretty bloody good. You know what I mean? The top 1% in India, the top 1% in China, is basically, you know, a huge chunk of the world's population. It's tens of millions of people, and they are going to be exceptional. And that's one of the reasons. And the second thing is this. I don't know if you know this, but roughly 60% of the hotels in America are owned by the Patels.
Really?
no, it's like real, like 60%. Over half of the hotels in the U.S. are owned by this little group from India called the Patels. Okay, it's the advantage that you get when you have social networks that kind of like, you know, reinforce each other. When you have, for instance, in like South Africa, where you have like, you know, nepotism or whatever, it's negative because overall it kind of feeds against each other. But when you get nepotism and other guys are not using it, bloody hell, it's a rocket ship to the top. You know what I mean? And I mean, it's not just, you know, Indians, Chinese. There was like, I mean, the famous case of like, you know, Jewish diamond sellers in New York and how they could do handshake deals. Because if you basically cheated somebody, your mother would talk to his mother and there'd be trouble. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff that happens here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the advantages of being in the U.S. is that, you know, obviously the things that may be holding you back at home help you out. But the U.S. system, like I said, is the greatest wealth creation system that's ever been created. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think that in terms of what, you know, if you are super talented, no matter what you are in the world, there's dancer, singer, entrepreneur, you know, electrician, whatever, there's only one place in the world that you would go to maximize that money, that talent. That's the U.S. And that is why even someone like Donald Trump can't break the U.S. That's why even, you know, the things we've had in the past, like the leadership in the past, is that system is so strong. You know, capitalism just is the winner, quite frankly.
Anyone can do anything, and that is borne out by the fact that one of the world's greatest and most cruel, stupid, arrogant, narcissistic men in history is the president of the United States. Anything is possible in the United States of America. David, I want to get back to Earth now. And last week or the week before, I caught you out and I said, clicks is down 10%. And you said, I haven't read it. Now, that said something to me because it means you were making money elsewhere and not you didn't really care. It's not that you didn't care, but it wasn't one of your priorities to read a stock exchange news service announcement from the JSE. Today, there have been two, one from Life Healthcare and one from Sappi. Both share prices down double digits. Have you looked at either of those trading statements?
Well, I'm not surprised with Sappi. I think whenever it comes out, it's a surprise on the downside. I don't know how they managed to survive, you know. But Life Healthcare, not really, because I'm a little surprised that it's down double digit. But once again, I haven't really dedicated myself to
that's okay.
to whatever. Where is this now? I'll give you a quick summary.
No, you don't have to. I was just asking if you had, and it doesn't matter at all.
You know,
I'm just saying.
Is very disappointing. You know, it's just one of those companies that is battling against just the world economic system. You know, people don't have newspaper anymore. They don't use fine papers, very little printed material anymore. So it's been very difficult. They have made kind of money on viscose, which is used in clothing, etc. But it's just they're not dominant. It's one of those industries where you can't be dominant. Where you've got huge amount of competition, and there's always price issues. There are always cost issues. So it's not one. I always look at the chart and say, okay, that's my Sappi, you know, or whatever. I don't know. But Life Healthcare, I'm a little surprised because, you know, what would have brought it down? I don't know.
11% fall. Anyway, we'll discuss that another time, maybe.
Yes.
Viv, now all the big companies have come out with their results, all the big tech companies. Are there any on the fringes of tech, the AI, big tech, the high tech, the companies that we can't even understand because they're so big? Any of the companies on the fringe that David has alluded to on many occasions, you know, the auxiliary industries even. I mean, AMD is not an auxiliary industry, but it came out with a sparkling set of results. And the share price, when I looked at it after a couple of hours trading, was up like 17%. Viv, have you caught any results that have really said, this is a company that I need to look at?
I would have used a bit of a pun here, sparkling, use the word sparkling. I just thought of this company off the top of my head. Have you heard of Toto Toilets?
I know Toto Toilets, yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, Toto Toilets. Okay. So they make ceramics, of course, toilet ceramics, but ceramics also are used for making what? Computer chips.
Ah.
And this company is up 53% in the last, since the year to date, it's up 25% in the last 5 days. Okay.
Goodness.
And it, And where the real thing is happening right now is that because the demand for AI, you know, spending is so high, what you're really finding is, yes, we have NVIDIA up, you have AMD up, you have the Microns up, and Micron used to be one of the small guys in the past as well. But what you're really finding now is a lot of these little tiny guys that are basically out of nowhere, this little small little company that, only in this case, not that small, but I mean, these little companies that are unknown, but developed a huge amount of expertise in particular areas of science that now are suddenly very useful for AI or useful computers. These companies suddenly find themselves with monopoly pricing power and suddenly huge profits coming through. And I think that that's the kind of stuff that I think the next level is, that you're finding these little tiny little companies that are supplying into the ecosystem. And when you have these hundreds of billions being spent on AI, and suddenly you are making something that nobody else in the world can make, and it's essential to, you know, the AI ecosystem, suddenly you find yourself, you know, like I said, doing 50% in you know, the first 4 months or 5 months of the year.
It's exactly the same.
Have you seen there's a big deal that NVIDIA has done with Corning? And one of the reasons, and Viv's going to have to explain this, is that these very high-level chips today, I mean, copper can't handle the speed at which they're processing, and therefore it melts or whatever it is, and they have to use optics. Mm. And Corning is known for its optics, and it makes the screens for Apple computers, etc. And NVIDIA is pumping in, I don't know how many billion into, you know, pumping into Corning, which is a, I think it's a New York City, not New York State, based company. We know Corning where, and all yes. things like that. But it's also
isn't that a kitchen product, David? Corningware.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's all to do with the kind of ceramics that they make.
Yes.
But I think that Corning is also, I have to look at this now because I just saw it flash across the screen.
Yeah.
But I mean, and I couldn't understand the significance of how, you know, of high speed that you can't use copper. If you're going to use these chips, and I think this applies to the Rubin chips, Viv, correct me if I'm wrong, that they're going to have to use, you know, fiber optic. They can't use copper. So this fits in with what Viv has been saying, but there is a deal with Corning.
I don't know how you two keep up with it. You know what? You must sit down every single day, and I'm talking to both of you now, and say, right, where is it going to go? We've got the big ones. We've got the big 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of these companies. Now we have to find something else. We have to find the next one that's going to go up a 200-300% over the next 5 years or something. And then suddenly David says Corning. Suddenly Viv's talking about toilets. And it's incredible, the amount of effect. It's spreading out. It's like an airport being built. And everyone says, do you buy the airline? Or you buy the airport company? No, you buy the land around it, because they're going to build hotels there, and there'll be infrastructure and everything. So it's exactly the same principle. David, markets.
Why I have to laugh at Toto toilets,
yes,
is that they make the Japanese toilets.
Oh, they're wonderful. Have you been to a Tokyo hotel?
No, but you can get them in America. Oh. You can buy them there, and you've got this. You can sit there and play with the buttons
all day,
and it does all kinds of things.
No, it really is extraordinary. I mean, when I first went to Tokyo and I saw the toilet, I had to phone down to the reception and say, "Listen, because you know, they thought I was wanted the TV sorted out. No, I wanted the toilet sorted out, because it's incredible the stuff that it does, and I don't even want to talk about it. Anyway, gentlemen, the dollar rand is 16.34, the British pound against the rand is 22.25, and the euro rand is 19.23. What else have we got? Let's get on to the commodities now. The gold price is up 1.25% to 47.47. That's a $58 move to the upside. And on the white metals, I've got platinum up 0.8% at $2,079 an ounce, and palladium down, funnily enough, down 1.4% to $1,531. Now, I'm going to go to the other commodities now, because I have to talk about copper because of the South African connection through Anglos and other things. Copper 360, one of my stocks in the in the Crystal Challenge. Copper is $6.16 per pound in New York at the moment on the Commodity Exchange New York, COMEX. It's up at just a third of a percent. What else have we got? Of course, the energy sector. It doesn't want to go down. I don't know. People don't believe Trump. I think everybody on the trading floors or on the trading desks of oil trading companies have a lot of salt there, because they take everything with a pinch of salt. And Brent crude oil is only down 2 2/3% at the moment at $98.56. Okay, it's well off its highs, $20 higher, but it's still 70% higher than it was from the lows of last year. West Texas crude, $92.41 per barrel, which is down 2.8%. The South African 10-year bond yield, it's an interesting one, 8.58%, which is 4 basis points weaker. That's the bond market going up. The yield's going down. The US 10-year, interesting one as well, 4.36%. Doesn't really believe it was 4.45% a couple of days ago, but that 10 basis points doesn't convince me. S&P 500 futures, though, yeah, convinces me after last night's performance. 7,402 at the moment on the June futures, which is up 0.2%. Bitcoin, I have to do that one, apparently. It's dipped below 80,000, 79,826, down 2.3%. David, I know you don't look at the JSE much until after hours, but did you see anything that caught your eye today? Otherwise, I'll give you the top five, bottom five.
Oh, no, I'm looking at them now. Obviously, Cecil has come down dramatically over the last couple of sessions. That's been down. Hmm. And the pressure continues on consumer stocks and on the banks, even though the banks are slightly steady today, nothing dramatic there. But there is this worry about where rates are going and also the health of the consumer. Mm. And, you know, even though, Lindsay, even though you say that oil has come down, it's still $90.
You That's know, what when, I said. When it's war still 70% started, we're 60. Higher.
Yeah, yeah. And this is going to hurt us. So I think there's still this deep fear about, you know, what's going to happen to this economy and whether we'll be actually able to grow this year. So that pressure still remains on a lot of on a lot of local stocks as well. So you know, that's dominating. I think there are a lot more losers today in the market than there are gainers, and what gainers there were came from the miners on that gold price that you mentioned. You know, and that's where most of the action today is in that area.
Datatec up 6%, Pan African Resources up 4.6%, Harmony up 4.25%, Anglo Gold 3.75% higher. On the downside, Life Healthcare 11% weaker, Sasol down 6.25%, Karoo down nearly 5%, MTN a 3.9% loser, and that's it. Viv, on the commodity side, and if you were looking at a commodity exposure on the JSE, you have to pick your commodity first. I'm going to give you three choices: PGMs, gold, and copper. Which one would you choose, Viv, given your AI experience and David talking about copper melting?
Look, I mean, copper is still going to be used. It's just that we need to be, this is mostly used for the high, you know, the training stuff where you need to have the huge data sets being transferred. I mean, you don't really need those kind of capacities when you're looking at, you know, the inference side, and it's still going to come into play. Copper is still going to come into play when you build the robots, because the fiber optics does not do the magnetic stuff. Copper does to move, you know, motors and stuff. When you transport electricity over large distances, copper is still going to be there. So copper, I think, is the industrial base. I'm not that negative on gold. I am very negative on PGMs. I think that, you know, what's happening right now with regards to the petrol price, etc., it's going to push a lot of people to go towards PG, towards electric vehicles. And once you switch, I don't think you're ever going to switch back. Mm. And the amount of, you know, demand for PGMs that goes towards fossil fuel driven vehicles is the number one source of demand for that group of metals. So longer term, I think it's in a bit of a death spiral, PGMs.
That's a nice way to end the show. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Oh, wait a second. I forgot the indices. David, you said you were looking at the JSE. Can you give us the closing indices, please? Mm.
It ended literally flat, I think down 12 points at 119.154. Miners were slightly better. Resource index up just under 1%. Financials also flat, up 0.10%. Banks slightly better as well. and mixed performance in industrials with a negative bias. Consumers up, the broader financial industrial, broader industrials were down. I'm talking about the heavyweights. Property down as well. There's quite a bit of trade taking place, at $30 billion day to day. Still a lot of speculation and trading around golds and the mining stocks. But we ended flat, yeah.
Okay. David, thank you very much for that. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities. Viv, thank you very much as well. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.